Good afternoon. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Finance to order. It is approximately 1:37, and it's Wednesday, March 7th. President or Representative Lee, Representative Pruitt, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Vice Chair Guerra, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Filton, Representative Graham, Representative Guttenberg was here and just stepped out, Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Seaton. Before we start, I'll remind everybody about the cell phones, and this afternoon we are continuing to pick up the remaining 34 amendments to the House operating budget. We stopped yesterday while we were still discussing House HES 22, so we'll start there. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to withdraw yesterday's HS 22. So move to withdraw that.
An objection to the withdrawal. Seeing no objection.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move replacement HSS 22.
And seeing no objection, the replacement HSS 22 is before us. Representative Ortiz.
We don't have an objection.
It passed. It did not pass. I know it's unusual, but we did not pass.
No objection.
We're good with it.
Great. We have adopted 22, substitute 22. That's a replacement amendment 22.
Mr. Chair, I had withdrawn HSS 21 yesterday, and we actually didn't withdraw it. We moved it to the We moved it to the bottom pile. I'd be glad to address it right now because we're on that particular topic, or I can, I'd be happy, whatever your pleasure is.
Go ahead and offer it now.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move HSS 21.
And is there an objection to the replacement HSS 21?
Objection for discussion.
Representative Pruitt.
The only thing that I wanted to ask, and I talked to the representative about this, is just, and he said that the department might be able to answer this, do they foresee, even though it's just intent language, some cost associated with coming together or putting this together? I'd be interested to just hear their thoughts on that.
And we will see if we have somebody from HES here to address that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Wilson.
The representative who moved the amendment might want to explain the replacement one first, and then they might want to then answer any questions there might be.
And Representative Ortiz, there's been an objection. Would you explain the amendment, any changes from the previous one that was adopted and has been withdrawn?
Surely, Mr. Chair. So this replacement, HSS 21, included some report back language to this particular amendment. It also eliminated any reference to population densities of any particular community, in fact removed the word community. So that's what this amendment does. It puts a report date at the end of it, and it also removes any reference to population densities, communities, et cetera.
Thank you. Could you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and who you're representing, of course, and then go ahead with the explanation or the reply to the question the Representative Pruitt had asked.
Okay. For the record, my name is Dwayne Mays, and I'm the director for the Division of Senior Disability Services within the Department of Health and Social Services. So I got your question, but I want you to ask me again so I make sure I understand.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, thank you. The only question I have is just, even though this is intent language, mm-hmm. and there's not, it's not a direct monetary value, do you see this being a cost to the administration or to the department, or is it something you think that can be absorbed within the normal scope of what you guys currently do?
So through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I do believe that we can absorb that. There's a few initiatives that we're working on right now. I've been presenting to other committees on some of these authorities as a part of Senate Bill 74. Our projection is to go live in May. That's going to kind of drop some of the pressure that we're experiencing right now, just given the volume of work right there once we go live. So I do believe that we can absorb that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I removed my objection.
Representative Bruce, objection been removed. Is there any other further objection? Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Like to speak to the objection?
Is any part of this recoverable from Medicaid waivers? Is this a study work that would be billable?
So through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, when I looked at this recently, I believe that we actually do this. We do it every day. We're all about looking at better ways to serve our rural communities. We're all about streamlining our processes. You know, we've been obviously flat funded for some time, and you know, we haven't brought on additional positions, so we have to be smarter about what we do. So I do believe that we actually do this. So when I saw it, it wasn't really a surprise to me, because we do it day in and day out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there, do you maintain your objection, Representative Guttenberg?
No.
That's removed. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, replacement House S-21 has been adopted. And then we will go to House S-23. And I believe I'm offering that amendment, so I'll move House S-23. Thank you. And this amendment revises a conditional language that allows the Department of Health and Social Services to transfer funding across appropriation lines. It changes the amount from $25 million to $20 million, and it excludes the Medicaid services appropriation from the transfer authority. It also adds legislative intent for the department to submit a report to the transfers that occurred during FY19 to the Legislative Finance Division by September 30th, 2019. And lastly, it adds legislative intent that the operating budget for FY20 and 21 reflect the 19 actual or anticipated transfers between appropriations for budget clarity. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This language, you're lowering it by $5 million, but this language was added into the budget some time ago, and the purpose of the addition of the language was during a situation when we had a MMIS system that was replacing our old system, and that system was not functioning up to par, and our providers of services, of Medicaid services, were not being paid. So the intent behind the ability of the department to move the dollars was to make sure that providers were being paid. It was meant to be a temporary language. It wasn't meant to be a continuous language, and at this point it is been restricted so that it doesn't help in the Medicaid service area at all. My question to the department, and I believe that now they do have some requirements to send a reporting on this, is has this been used in the last fiscal year? And if so, how?
Thank you. I'd like to call the department up. Appropriate person, when you put yourself on the record. Heard the question, go ahead and respond to Representative.
For the record, my name is Shonda O'Brien, Assistant Commissioner for Health and Social Services. Representative Tilton, through the chair, can I clarify with you which fiscal year you're referring to, whether you're referring to FY18 or FY17?
If we could use both, that'd be great.
Sure. So for the current fiscal year, we have not used the transfer authority. We typically don't see a need in the first 6 months of the fiscal year, sometimes not even in the first 9 months. Typically, as we do projections and see how spending is taking place, we would evaluate whether or not there's a need to move authority. In FY17, we only had the authority to move general funds. We weren't able to move any other funding sources. So it limited our ability to maximize potential in other areas of the department where we might have had excess federal authority, for example. Things like that where we might have been able to achieve more alignment internally. So in FY17, we did use the transfer authority to move general funds. What we found ourselves doing at the end of the fiscal year was trying to satisfy a general fund shortfall in Medicaid. And so we transferred $15 million to cover what that shortfall was.
Further questions? Representative
Garrett. Mr. Chair, Assistant Commissioner, just tell me, maybe I'll tell me how where I have this wrong. In the department, there are a number of programs that people automatically qualify for by statute, by federal law or by state law: public benefits, adult temporary assistance, child care, a number of things that are income-based, and if you satisfy the income or the income and asset test, you're entitled to those benefits. You try and project how many people are going to qualify for those. It's somewhat of a guesstimate to the best you're able to, and it might be more people qualify for one program than another, or another, a third one instead of a fourth one, or the fourth one instead of the fifth one. There are those programs. And then, you know, Representative Wilson and I know in foster care you don't know exactly how many people are going to be there, but you have a daily rate that you have to pay. And I suppose there are other divisions I'm not even thinking about. But are those some of the places where you're trying to guesstimate, but you might have to move around, and I'm missing any major ones?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Guerra, you're right. There are some situations that are unforeseeable. Due to caseloads, unknown circumstances that could be happening. A really good example this year, we've been monitoring our Senior and Disability Services General Relief Program, the Assisted Living Program, because of some things going on, you know, with API and with closure of the Beans Cafe in Anchorage. We've been monitoring to see what the effects and the impacts are going to be to that program. That would be an area where we could use this transfer authority to offset what might have been a supplemental request instead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So since you've had this authority, what is the highest amount you've ever had to utilize to match funds or to take care of programs as ones that we just heard about?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson. Since I've been in this position, last year was the first time that we've used the authority to transfer general funds. Right now, like I mentioned, in FY18, we're monitoring a couple places. We didn't ask for supplemental requests just because we anticipate having the ability to address those needs internally. But typically, we budget pretty close to what we need, and in most years before FY15, the department had sufficient authority to address most of those needs. Since the reductions have been taking place in the last several years, it's getting harder to manage within that budget at times. It's like Representative Guerra mentioned, we do have some circumstances that take place that are a little outside of our control, and therefore we manage what we can internally. I would say we're still pretty good at managing our budget pretty closely. This transfer authority is less than 1% of our total budget.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Okay, so you said the percent of your total budget, but you can't use this for Medicaid portions. So would that percent change quite a bit if we're talking about just the areas that you can utilize it? And I'm sorry, and what did you say in FY17 did you spend the money on?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, in FY17, We used the funding to offset overspending in Medicaid services. And so we didn't transfer the authority into the Medicaid services component. However, we were able to create an interagency receipt authority to offset those costs using another component that expenditures took place in.
Follow up?
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
So although we say that this can't be used for Medicaid, you still have a way to be able to do that. So that language within this $20 million really is kind of irrelevant.
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, in FY17, we were able to find a way to leverage that ability to reduce what would have been an additional cost in the supplemental bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is that, because in this amendment, we say they can't use it for Medicaid, but obviously there's still through interagency receipts or others to still make it happen, which I don't know whether we have a problem with or not, because it's a policy call. Whether it comes through the supplemental or it comes through this $20 million, it's all kind of the same pot, you know, of money. So I guess my question to you is, and I guess I really don't remember why we took, because I think it was started because of the Medicaid issue and because of, you never know when the federal dollars are going to come in or how many people will qualify, a whole lot of different things when it comes to that program. So why is Medicaid not able to use this monies, these monies?
Representative Wilson, what we were trying to do is make sure that ongoing budgets, that this transfer authority does not mean we don't budget tightly and we that we don't budget for anticipated costs. We want to know as the legislature where they anticipate costs, so we want them to look at the past history of where those costs were. They could give us a report and tell us where those transfers were made and if they anticipate that they're going to need that money in that budget the next year, we would like it to be moved to that line and make sure we're not in the situation where we are not worried about adjusting those numbers so tightly for the legislature to have knowledge of those because they have this authority. We want them to be able to use this authority because we really don't want to get supplementals, but we don't want to have it so restrictive that they, or so loose that they don't adjust their budgets for anticipated needs that they've had to rely on the transfer authority in the previous years.
So, Mr. Chairman, I completely agree with you that we want to know where the money is being spent because one thing I have learned in the last couple of days is that money gets spent in places that we don't know they do until something gets put into actuals. But what I'm saying is it sounds like they're using it for Medicaid anyway because they're going through kind of a roundabout way to take care of clients. I mean, I'm not faulting for what you're doing because you're trying to take care of those who come in the door. Whether that $20 million gets paid out at the time that it's utilized or putting into a supplemental, it's something that we're going to be responsible for anyway. We might not have needed a fast-track supplemental to at least get us to the 90 days. So $20 million of that 90 might have helped us not have to worry about our providers not being paid because the money's running out. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but if Medicaid's being paid out of it anyway, the language really isn't doing what you think it does. Is that not correct?
Representative Wilson, if the department is able to actually move a small amount of money in comparison to their total budget among those line items so that we don't have a supplemental coming back to us the next year, we would rather have that knowledge ahead of time, and we would like to make sure that their budgets get adjusted instead of not adjusted for anticipated needs based on their past. And I'm saying we're taking their actual and it has to be the same dollar amount, or if what's anticipated and what the transfers took place and what that anticipates in the future to make sure that those are changed in their budget item lines to accurately as they can reflect those costs that they had to cover by transfers.
Okay. Follow up?
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
Okay, so maybe I'm just misunderstanding, so I'm going to try a different way. So it sounds like we're okay if they use it for foster care
or within the OCS, as long as we know about it, but we're not okay with them using it for Medicaid. But in reality, they are using it for Medicaid. They're just using interagency receipts to get there, which I'm fine with that, as long as it's a cost and we know. I would prefer them to come back and say, I used it for Medicaid versus an interagency receipt, because interagency receipts are much harder to follow on where the money was spent. I mean, just as you, it kind of commingles in a different fashion. So if we're trying not to get a supplemental, which I completely agree with, because we actually have language to talk about that, then it just doesn't make any sense to me that we would have language in this amendment that says it could be spent on anything but Medicaid, when in reality they are, and it would be a lot clearer if they just told it was Medicaid versus coming back as an interagency receipt in which we don't truly know what that money was spent on. So basically the language in here is not being, it's kind of not being used, so it's not really necessary. Because we believe that we're going to get a report and know where it goes, and we don't want a supplemental, then we believe that they're going to use it in the right fashion, or we just only want to, then we need to tighten the language up and say even through interagency receipts they can't. I just think we need to go one way or the other. But where we're at right now doesn't work, and I understand that they're in a tight spot because we don't cap Medicaid. We, as we heard Rocco, if you qualify, we are responsible for paying it, whether it goes into a supplemental or whether it's paid through the regular operating budget.
And Representative Wilson, you know, there were people that were concerned about transfers to Medicaid. And if you're not concerned about that with this amount, I'd be happy to take an amendment offered to allow to remove the exception for Medicaid authority out of there, trying to make sure that we get that that division, if you want to eliminate that, so that it can be used for Medicaid as well. I will consider that a friendly amendment.
Can we take it at ease?
Brief at ease. We're going to come back on the record after a brief leave. And Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer conceptual amendment number one to HSS 23, and that is to delete the two words to or. And it would read that the Department of Health and Social Services accept that no transfer may be made from the Medicaid services appropriation.
Thank you. Does everyone see that in the amendment there? It says the last sentence of the first paragraph of the brief. Is there any objection to the motion to remove the words to or from that last sentence? There is Representative Wilson can explain the amendment. Seeing no change, that conceptual amendment or the amendment removing two or has been adopted.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on the amended amendment, I am still uncomfortable when we're talking giving one department any kind of money where they can bounce it back and forth on this. I want to make sure everybody understands, though, the public that's looking, that we are and have asked for a report before. They didn't spend any in 2017. That's why there wasn't a report. We've got issues in this department because of the growing of Medicaid that we've seen, the Medicaid expansion, the $90 million that we had, but that is not a department problem. That's statute and federal regulations that we have yet to really address. So I want to make sure that department knows that they are just doing what we have told them to do. And if you are eligible for Medicaid or Medicaid expansion, then they are required then to give whatever services that they have. The reason I asked for this was, one, it was my understanding that they are already doing it in more of a roundabout way. We also have a $90 million supplemental that is going to be coming before us not too long. But it's also my understanding that this money, if they had been able to utilize it for Medicaid, could then get us to the 90-day get out of jail here and not have to wait for a supplemental or try to have a fast-track supplemental. And we're going to pay it unless we want to, in the last 40 days, tackle Medicaid and how we want to rewrite it. And I'm pretty sure that that is not ready to see prime time at this. But I do want to make sure that we are going to look very closely at where the money's being spent and hope that what we have appropriated, unless something really unforeseeable happens, that this money is not necessarily utilized. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to put this amendment in.
Thank you. And so without objection,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther.
And question for the department. Are there any other sources of funds, federal or programs, that are covered and are not able to transfer money out? Here we have singled out Medicaid services. Are there any other that are lived in a place where we jeopardize something if we move money in or out of?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, if I'm understanding you correctly, the amendment doesn't affect our ability. Right now we can transfer authority across any of our funding sources. So if we have a shortfall in federal authority and we need the additional authority someplace else in the department, we can transfer that authority and receive those funds. So this won't restrict us from being able to do that. This would just restrict us from moving anything out of Medicaid services.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection? I don't know if we actually had an objection. No, to the conceptual amendment. So the conceptual amendment has been adopted as conceptual amendment number one, the removing the words to or from the bottom line of the first paragraph. Representative Wilson.
Oh, I thought we were going to go the whole minute.
Yeah, that's where we're going now. And
I renew my objection.
For the whole amendment.
For the minute as the amendment committed.
Okay. Is there further objection to the amendment as amended? So without seeing any objection, S 23 as amended has been adopted. And now go to amendment number 25.
They're all done. All ready.
We did 24, we did 25, we did 26.
24,
25,
26, we're done. Okay. And
take a break.
Good. So at this point in time, we are going to advance amendments from jump to SAP 23 on page 52. We have people in the town that are going to be leaving, and we want for these amendments. So we are going to deal with SAP 23, and I'll move SAP 23. And there's an objection, and this amendment adds a new section B to section 27, retroactivity, for the appropriation made in section 19L, ensuring that the appropriation takes effect in FY18 in case the budget bill is not signed before July 1st. This subsection is always included with an appropriation bill that has provisions that take place in the current fiscal year. I'm aware that the upcoming amendment, SAP 27, would change the current 19L, but even if SAP 27 is adopted, this retroactivity provision would be needed. But really just a technical to make sure if the budget isn't officially signed, we are still in place for 2018 because this is a supplemental. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, SAP 23 has been adopted.
Sorry, I got lost. So we had an objection to SAP 23 when you started. What do we not have? Yeah, I did. I said objection. He said SAP 23.
Okay, then we are back and we'll.
I said objection. Susie said.
Representative Wilson, would you like to speak to your objection?
I'm going to let my colleague do that.
I think probably what the colleague is probably trying to make sure that we understand exactly what we're doing here, and I appreciate that. And I think the way that I understand it is this is basically a provision in case we are not successful in our 90-day endeavor or maybe even our 138-day endeavor or whatever it may be, whatever that if we cannot complete the budget in time for July 1st, and therefore it's signed after that date, that it would not penalize them if they were to, say, in June, be able to succeed in completing an agreement for which the SDPR were to receive certain amounts of money. And as it currently stands, it would be they could probably receive a lot of money, but that it would still be deemed as being received in 2018, and it would not prevent them from being able to accept that money because it was signed after July 1st. That's how I understand it. Am I explaining it correctly, Mr. Chairman?
You are.
Okay. And for that, I don't see that being necessarily a concern myself. I think that's more of it's preparing for if things go sideways, I guess.
And Representative Grote, that's correct. That it's when the bill is signed by the governor, and oftentimes the bill, when it's passed, there's transmittal times and all those kind of things. And this is a technical amendment to go with any supplemental, so that the supplemental actually, when the bill gets signed by the governor, it's in the year for which the legislature intended the appropriation.
And to continue on the point, and I think the reason that this is in, we have to add this for this specific piece in this bill is because we are talking about the overall operating budget. We're not talking about a fast-track supplemental or how we're handling the other things this year. So therefore, because this is kind of unique, we've already pulled most supplemental items out. It needs to remain in for this specific item. Correct?
Representative Bruce, that's exactly correct. Representative Wilson.
Okay, well, I'm still confused. I was hoping that was going to help. So I turned to 19L, so if I got this correct, so in the budget bill on page 67, that's the L that we are talking about in this amendment, correct? And it just so maybe if I read it, it would make it easier. So it says the amount of statutory designated program receipts received by the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation during the fiscal years ending in June 30th, 2018 and June 30, 2019 is appropriated to the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund. So are we just, I guess, I don't know what the statute designated program receipts currently are, and where are they sitting, because they obviously don't seem like they're in the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project Fund.
And we can bring staff up, but basically what we're doing is reporting that any money that we appropriated in the supplemental, this is the only supplemental item that is remaining in here. We would have the same kind of thing for any supplemental budget to go forward, whether it's fast track, whether it's slow. Anything that's supplemental means it needs to apply to the fiscal year, but if it isn't signed by some clerk until after July 1st, then it's actually not applied in this fiscal year. And all of a sudden we're changing the FY19 budget instead of applying it to the FY18, which is what a supplemental does. And so this just makes sure that in the funding works of time, the supplemental items that the legislature approves are applied in as a supplemental in FY18, not applied long fiscal year.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
And thank you for that. So what is the amount of the statutory designated program receipt? Or is that open-ended and that's something where the gas line, the AGDC goes out and if they go get any between now and then from China or from wherever they may get them, then it's including those fees, those amounts, or are we only talking about the amount that's in the supplemental?
The amendment that's coming in 27 is, Representative Pruitt's amendment is covered by this because that will be a supplemental as well.
Yep.
And we can bring someone to the table if you desire. We'll bring my staff up.
For the record, Joan Brown, staff to co-chair Seaton. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, your understanding is exactly correct. This is just a technical legal provision that we want to have in all of the budget bills that have any type of supplemental appropriation. It's my understanding that we'll be taking up Amendment HSAP 27 immediately after this amendment. So, and it has an FY18 appropriation in it.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay, and thank you so much for your understanding. So, but this is actually two amounts possibly. It's an amount that's in the supplemental currently, and then possibly any statutory designated program receipts that AGDC may be able to go out and find. So we're talking about two different things?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, no. This just applies to Section 19L that you read. Because it has for the fiscal years ending June 30, 2018, that makes this provision a supplemental provision. And in the next amendment, the amounts are split. There's one amount for FY18 and one for FY20.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any question? Is there an objection? Is an objection to SAP 23 maintained?
I remove my objection. Thank you.
Objection is removed. Is there a further objection? Seeing none, SAP 23 is adopted. And I'll now move SAP 24.
Mr. Chair, I'm only object for discussion, but I will be removing it. I'd actually like to start with, I appreciate you bringing this forward. For people that may, you know, this things are moving fast. There might be people that are watching. This is something that Representative Thompson and I have, for the last couple of years, we've been very vocal on, and that is the inflation proofing, this year's inflation proofing of the corpus. And so I appreciate that you're offering this, and I look forward to supporting it. This will move $942 million from the earnings reserve into the corpus as we continually do our best to ensure that the principal of the fund maintains it continues to grow and maintain the value so that it can produce for future generations. So unless anyone else, I will wait to see if anyone else has anything before I remove my objection, but I appreciate you bringing this forward.
And we'll take just briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, I think hopefully we all agree with this, to inflation proof the permanent fund. It's a higher number than if we inflation proofed it in other years, but this has been a 3-year course of non inflation proofing the permanent fund. I think since 2016 it has not been inflation proofed, and I think it should be, so I'm glad it is. I don't know that you've objected, or the last speaker has objected a couple of years, but definitely last year. So, thank you.
Reverend Wilson.
Thank you. And I just want to let those who are listening that although this is just for 1 year, there's absolutely nothing as we see oil come back and more coming down the field that we could not go back. We know what the amounts are for the other years, and we could at that point, once we have our budget at a sustainable level, to go back in, and that would be my intent. To at some point get us back to where we need to be, because we all want to see the fund grow and be prosperous for the state.
And thank you. And I just wanted to let everyone know that, you know, the value of the corpus had changed. We wanted to make sure that the right amount of inflation proofing was going in, so we had it updated. So it actually changed by $1 million, so it's $942 million instead of an original estimate of $943 million. We didn't know how much change it was going to be, but that's what it was. And so is there any further objection or objection to it?
Yeah, before I remove my objection, I'd just also like to thank Representative Wilson and Representative Sultan for joining us over the, as Representative Thompson and I have continued to voice our support for this. But with that, I remove my objection, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Guerra, for your words as well. I think this is an important move to make.
And is there any further objection? Seeing no further objection, Amendment SAP 24 has been adopted. And I actually moved it, forgot my script. 27 was supposed to be next after the other one. I was going through my package instead of my script. Representative Pruitt, would you care to move your amendment?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move SAP 27.
And I'll object for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment that you have in front of you is related to some of the language, some of the sections that we just addressed earlier, which is related to the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. The language, as it currently stands in the budget, allows for an unended amount to be accepted by the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation for a natural gas project. That statutory designated receipts would go into the Alaska LNG gas fund. And the concern that I had that brought this forward was the legislative ability to understand whether or not the project is something that we are comfortable with going forward with.
The open-ended language was concerning to me. So what we have in front of us here is language that allows for two separate amounts in two different years. One is a supplemental, as we just had the discussion on S&P 23 about, that allows for $500 million to be accepted in the fiscal year of 18. The second portion allows for $500 million to be accepted within 2019. Those numbers, for people that may be interested, there's some people that immediately go, well, that's a lot of money. Well, it is a lot of money. But I think what it does is it still allows for the project to go forward to the next stage. The goal here is not to stop the project. The goal here is not to put something out there that says we're not going forward. The amount here is enough, as I understand it, for us to take the next step, which in typically would have been called a FEED stage. I know through the current discussion, they've kind of changed the way that we're going forward. There's not really the stage gates in the same capacity that we had in the past. But that still kind of exists and is still necessary. So this would allow for more than enough money to do that and allow for them to accept that. There is a second piece, and that second piece says that this is the basically the most they will be getting without the legislature going through an appropriation process within the next year to allow more to be able to come in. So I would ask for your support. I think this was one that truly one that we spent time on and thought through it as a way to ensure that the legislature still could be a part of the conversation as this goes forward. So I'd love to answer any questions that may have.
Thank you. And the issue of the ability of AGDC to accept more without legislative approval, that's a question that we've had. And we do have AGDC here if they come to the table to address this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Gene Terrio on behalf of AGDC. As has been discussed, the amendment is really two different components. One deals with allowing a specific amount of money to come in the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year as compared to the language that appeared in the governor's budget, which was open-ended and would allow the funds to come in across a two-year period of time. Of course, when the governor put that language in, it was in December, so we had half of fiscal year 18 still stretching out in front of us. And of course, as time has ticked by during the session, that window for potential money to come in is growing narrower. And so we appreciate that the amount that the representative is suggesting is a healthy amount. As he's indicated, the project is big and money to continue to advance the project is big. We do hope there is an opportunity to attract outside sources of money to help us with the part of the process that we're going through right now in anticipation of the bigger, fuller deal coming together. But again, if it's broken into these two pots, just the $500 million, and again, the possibility that fiscal year 18 is really coming to a close, that would likely leave us only $500 million in fiscal year 19. And as we've presented to the legislature, we think that this process that we're in right now could be between $700 and $800 million. And so while the governor's language had flexibility between the two, and when it's parceled out like that, it gives us some concern that we may bump into an upper cap. And so if there would be some consideration of raising that dollar amount, either in both of the years or in the second year where it's more likely that money would come in, that would be helpful. So there's that separate issue. With regard to the language in the front part of the amendment that would remove the ability of LBNA to consider a SDPR dollar amount that is above what is allowed. I think the concern there is messaging. What message do we send to a potential partner that comes in with a dollar amount that doesn't fit within the specified appropriation limit? And my concern would be that we'd be messaging to them that if they wanted those funds to be able to be received in fiscal year 19, when the legislature is not in session, that's when all of you are going to be running your campaigns. And so there would be a requirement then that we'd have to convene the full legislature if, in fact, those funds were to be received. If the LBNA language is left in, we would be able to take the dollar amount that exceeds the appropriation limit to the Budget and Audit Committee, explain the dollars, explain what they're for, and then be able to bring the money in that way without having to suggest to somebody that they're bringing their dollars in right in the middle of a big political campaign season. So that's the concern there, is just, you know, what message does it send?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could, I think I'm right about this, but you could tell me that. So my only concern would be were this project to move forward without any legislative approval. But under the statute we passed, legislative approval is required for any obligations of the state, as I recall. So you won't be able to obligate the state regardless of whether this amendment passes. And then were this $1 billion, it's not like anybody's going to build a gas line for $1 billion, so I'm not really worried about that. I'd actually be pretty happy about that. I don't see, even if this were $1 billion, I don't see a gas line happening. I just see you being able to bring in investment dollars for very preliminary parts of a gas line planning process. Do I have that correct?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Guerra, and I certainly appreciate that. Going back a number of sessions, you know, when the original statutes were put together that created AGDC over time, there was a statute that was passed. It's AS 3125240, and Mr. Chairman, I'll provide the staff with copies of these, that says that the corporation cannot obligate the state of Alaska. So if when a project goes forward as a corporation partners with people or SDPR money comes in, we can't deploy it in a way that creates an obligation for the state. The statute is pretty explicit. If the corporation were to issue bonds, the legislature put a prohibition since that if there is a capital reserve fund that's created with a bond issuance, we have to come back to the legislature to get authorization to do so. So there's a number of statutory points where we have to come back to the legislature. In addition, in the last semi-monthly report that was distributed to legislative offices, we answered a series of questions that came from Senator Giesel and Senator McKinnon. Question number 6 specifically asked us to go through a list of anticipated agreements and to highlight under the new possible structure which ones still required legislative approval, and there are a couple of those agreements that will require legislative approval. So under the concern that with completely open-ended SDPR, you know, could somebody write a $40 billion check and the project just, you know, is a runaway train, clearly that's not what we intended and, you know, wouldn't be allowed.
Thank you.
And under the concern of the amount of money and whether $500 million does kind of bump up the cap. Representative Pruitt and I have talked about this, and I'd like a friendly amendment, and that would be to move a conceptual amendment to increase the amount of FY18 from 500 to $1 billion and to increase the amount of FY19 from $500 million to $1 billion. So that's a conceptual amendment that I think gets us out of the box.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Recognizing the concerns that they've had over being able to get the money before the end of this fiscal year, which I think
And it might be appropriate to have Mr. Terrio tell us if he does see something on the horizon in terms of money for SDPR money by the end of this fiscal year. Actually, let me ask that question, and then I'll continue. Do you see any money coming in that you would need to accept as the SDPR by the June 30th end of the fiscal year?
And, Mr. Chairman, it's less of a possibility, but not outside the realm of possibility. I mean, the discussions that are going on right now are very fluid, and certainly we wouldn't want to be precluded if it were a possibility.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I think the kind of the intent, and I want to make sure that maybe I think the intent was to allow that billion to be fluid over the 18 and 19 timeframe. I understood started discussions, and that yes, I'm definitely fine with ensuring that if they are not able to complete some of that by this fiscal year, and they need a little bit more, they needed more room, they needed to get up to that billion in 19, that would be okay. I'll see if anyone has other concerns.
And so just to be clear, this is an 18 appropriation of receipt authority of up to a billion. If that isn't completed in 18, then the 19 authority is $1 billion. And so that's where we are, is $1 billion in either year. I mean, if they would get $700 million in FY18, then they could complete that deal. We wouldn't be stuck. And if they have another person for $700 million in 19, they could complete that deal. So, but it's not transferable additive, so that there's $2 billion in FY18. It's $1 billion for 18 total available. And so that they can go into negotiations and not be limited to below where there may be a commitment, and the same thing in 19. So just to be clear, and Representative Wilson.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if they don't get $1 billion by the end of the 2018, they only get $700 million. They can't make up the $300 million. And the next year, they're just working on their second $1 billion. Is that correct? I have another question, too. So who's going to give us $1 billion and we're not going to obligate ourselves to anything?
Mr. Chairman, it could be from one of the potential partners that have been discussed in the press overseas as far as potential buyer. It could be an EPC contractor. I mean, we're talking to EPC contractors, potential buyers, potential financiers, and at this point, the reports that I get back from folks who have traveled overseas is there's a lot of excitement and interest in the project, and so it could come from any one of that type of potential investor.
Follow up? So, I mean, they're not doing it without an obligation from someone. I mean, they're not giving the money and say, go do whatever you want, and I don't want anything in return. I'm pretty sure nobody does that. So instead of the state being obligated, is it just the gas line authority that's obligated? I mean, if somebody's going to give money, there's got to be a contract somewhere. I'm just trying to figure out, since you just told us it can't be the state can't be obligated into that, are the contracts just solely with AGDC, or who are they exactly with?
Mr. Chairman, it would be a contract between the person bringing that money in and AGDC, and AGDC's liability as a corporate entity of the state is limited to the corporate entity.
Thank you.
Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to say for the record, being supportive of the conceptual amendment and the amendment SAP 27, I think the work between Representative Pruitt and yourself and Mr. Terrio, the information, I think it's it shows the potential importance of this, but also the momentum, and I think that limiting it, though, also is responsible, just wanted to speak favorable of the conceptual amendment.
Thank you. Is there, Representative Wilson, you had the objection?
I remove my objection on the conceptual amendment.
The objection to conceptual amendment number one has been removed. Is there any further objection to conceptual amendment number one?
No.
So conceptual amendment number one has been adopted. Representative Pruitt, are you?
I don't know that I have any more to add on that unless there's other discussion on other points.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Can you walk through the authority, the LBNA, and what that means for this?
Certainly.
With or without it?
Mr. Chairman, if you can see in the wording on the first block of text there, down at the very bottom, that's, I believe, your standard budgetary authorization that allows LBNA to consider dollars, program receipt dollars that come in excess of what was specifically budgeted for, and allows it to come in under that 3707080H. That is the process by which an entity comes to budget and audit and asks for consideration of approval of those extra dollars. Budget and audit then can either convene and take it up and approve it. The administration does have the authority to receive the money if budget and audit chooses not to meet. But I think, you know, if in fact budget and audit met and turned the request down after we explained what the dollars were, what they were for, you know, anybody that was bringing a dollar to that process, I think would think twice about following through if they did not see a legislative body that supported what was being proposed.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First thing I just want to put on the record, and I'll speak for myself, I won't speak for others, but when I'm running my campaign, it has absolutely nothing to do with being a legislator. That is our first and foremost thing to do. And if we need to come back here on a project like this, I'm pretty sure I would see all my friends and table coming back for that. So I don't want the public to think that that has anything to do with our obligation. I guess I'm just concerned that I want to put on here is that I just want to make sure we're keeping this as transparent to the public. And I guess that's where I'm kind of getting a little lost in this. I mean, we're saying now that they can take in $2 billion. Okay, so the state's not obligated, but AGDC is obligated. It's the gas that belongs to every Alaskan here. And I know there has been concern on how it's going to be utilized, big concerns for Fairbanks on whether or not, again, it will bypass us and go overseas instead. And so maybe the maker of this amendment can help me get there on those concerns and giving them this authority for, I mean, $2 billion is a lot of money. I know we can't build a gas line. That's even much higher, but maybe you could help me understand so I could be able to tell my constituents better. By giving this $2 billion, what do you anticipate, or Mr. Terrio can answer either one, would be how far along could we possibly get as far as being obligated, and then what happens if Fairbanks and Norpool again is bypassed for something better, which there is nothing better, but sometimes we think money is. But that's where my concern right now is raising that level that of the checks and balance and where we could end up being and then no turning around and you know, figuring out to make sure that Alaskans are taken care of first.
Mr. Chairman, it's that the dollars would be used to cover everything from engineering work, contractual structuring of a deal leading up to but not beyond a final investment decision. If, in fact, there was any obligation of the state, again, you know, that would require legislative approval, there are other specific things called out in statute that would require legislative approval. There are potential agreements that do require legislative approval, fewer than in the previous project structure, but there still are a few that we've identified that would require legislative approval. So I think if there's a fear that the whole project goes forward, it's not enough money to get to that stage. It really is just enough money to continue through the regulatory process, contractual structuring contractual agreements, up to the point where we would be prepared to consider a final investment decision perhaps, but not in actually pulling the trigger to construct.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
And since this is kind of an outside corporation, you know, as far as the state goes, is there any reporting back on if you're able to raise this money, where the money has come from, where the money is being spent on, or is that private information?
Mr. Chairman, I would anticipate that it would be information that we would be very excited to share, and it would be included in our semi-monthly report to the legislature.
Can I have a two-minute at ease?
At ease. So we're back on the record, and I wanted to draw all members' attention to the legislative legal document that was distributed. Representative Pruitt and I talked about this, and we wanted to make sure that the that we were not, with the amendment, violating any of the current statute, and so I asked Representative Pruitt, and he obtained the legal memo on that, and so you can see that the limitation on further investment is legal and can be done as the amendment is. I just want to say that I think with going up to the $1 billion, then that takes us out of the probability that we would have a problem with that. One of the things I do want to say is that, you know, when the AGDC and the governor's office were negotiating and getting MOUs, everybody said, well, where's the money? You know, this isn't meaningful because there's no money. And now we get to the point of saying we want to restrict the ability to take money. And so I think that we want to make that level high enough so that it is fully supportive, that the legislature is saying we are supportive of this project going forward, and we want to see as part of these agreements that there is some skin in the game from the people that we're negotiating with. And so I think that this amendment gives that ability in both FY18 and 19 to move forward. And if there is a deal that will be, you know, $20 billion or something, the legislature will surely and quickly call itself back into special session to approve that kind of issue. And we will have legislative oversight at that time. I do want to say that, you know, this whole endeavor with AGDC has been done in a way to insulate the process of the corporation from public or political whims. And so I don't think that when we're getting down to finally partnering with large sums of money, over $1 billion, that's not going to be in the political whims or initiatives. So I think that I just want to say that I do appreciate this amendment, and I think that this satisfies both the people who want to see the ability to have some actual dollars in the project from the people that we're negotiating with, as well as protecting the legislature's ability to review the deal that's being made when we're coming down to the last of it. So I do appreciate Representative Pruitt bringing this forward and working with me as well on making sure that we rounded out all the issues. And so if there's further discussion, I'll wait to remove my objection. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put one other thing on record. I don't think there's anybody that's not appreciative of the project, but I think we also have to remember that the Alaskans are first and foremost. And, you know, for us, maybe $1 billion doesn't sound like a lot, even though it does to me. We also have to make sure that we're not forgetting them in this project. This is not about how much we can necessarily sell our gas for, but also making sure that areas that have been hurting for a long time economically because of energy costs aren't forgotten with that, and that also when people invest, they expect something in return. No one's going to give us $500 million or $1 billion and not have contracts and want to make sure that whoever they are investing for are able to get that as well. So although I'm still uncomfortable with the amount, I understand that this is not a small project, but I want to let, you know, Alaskans know that we're going to make sure that those documents are public so you know who the people are who are investing and that you are still foremost on the front of the line. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection? See no further objection. SAP 27 as amended is adopted. And now we'll go back. Thank you. And now we'll go back to where we were in test.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz.
I move to rescind this committee's action on HGOV2.
On who?
On HGOV2.
Page number.
What page?
That was.
It's the governor's one for $550,000.
It's the 150.
What page?
25.
And the governor's special fund.
I'm objecting.
Page 25.
That's the one we
yep.
Page 25, HGOV2. So, was there an objection? Seeing no objection, the amendment has been adopted. We rescinded our action in on HGOV2. Representative Ortiz?
Speaking to that, the reason for this?
Move the amendment.
I move HGOV2.
So we have HGOV before us.
I'm going to pass it for now. He just moved it.
And I'll
object.
I'm not going to object. It's my amendment.
We have an objection. Representative Ortiz.
Briefities.
Oh, that's right. Well, slide you want me to?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the committee already said they could. Thank you for moving my amendment again. I appreciate that. And I found more information out, and I thought everybody would be appreciative of that because I had a sense that I was going to still be at a zero. But anyway, beyond that, there was some discussion yesterday, so I went back all the way down to back to 2010 to find out what's been out of this account. In 2010, we took there was $294,300 for personal services, which I'm not sure that was an emergency, at, of $172,600. And services of $121,700. In 2011, and this is when it was at $800,000, yes?
Can I interject? In that particular year, how much was budgeted in that particular year?
I was going to tell you, yes, sir. I'm sorry, I should have done that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Representative Wilson.
So I'll do this in a specific order so it'll be easier to follow me, and I'll try not to talk so fast. So FY 2010, $800,000 was in the budget, and of the $800,000, $294,300 were actual expenditures, personal services $172,600 and services $121,700. In 2011, again it was $800,000, $5,700 was spent in services. In 2012 and 2013, it was still $800,000, nothing was spent out of either one of those. In 2014, it was $800,000, $49,600. Sadly enough, in 2014, we didn't have the same details as we have now, so I couldn't tell you what it was used for. For Representative Guerra, in 2015, it was $650,000 because then Governor Parnell reduced it, his own budget, by $150,000 in the contingency line. He then spent $194,700 in state travel with $67,300, services $127,300, and commodities $200,000. Not exactly sure what they ran out of. In 2016, Governor Walker then reduced contingency by $50,000. So now the budget is at $600,000. In that year, $89,100 were done, and all that we could find in the line items was financial services, agency support as needed to meet high priority needs. So what the high priority needs for $89,100 is, I'm sorry enough, I can't tell you that. In 2017, then there was a $50,000 unallocated reduction. I'm pretty sure that came from our friends on the other side of the hall. We were doing a lot of unallocated at that time. So now we're down to $550,000. And no actual expenditures were done in 2017 or 2018. What I find interesting as well is that we heard about three expenditures yesterday, none of which I could find out of here, to do with transitional cost, redistricting, or the gas line. I also spoke with Mr. Teal, had staff speak to Mr. Teal to make sure that my numbers were accurate, and they are accurate. And I have yet to find anything from 2010 to present that this is being used as an emergency fund of any kind, and why would even have it here? All I did was decrease it by $150,000, which leaves $400,000 in it, which is more than any year that we've had from 2010 to present. So the question is really is, do you want to have a slush fund here or not?
Thank you. Question for
Representative Ortiz.
Area of the amendment. Thank you for that research, Representative Wilson. I'm sure of it. The question would be, in all of your research, did you see ever, there was one statement there, perhaps a little bit unclear, was there ever any specific action taken by the legislature to reduce the governor's budget?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I am pretty sure that the $50,000 unallocated reduction came from our brothers and sisters on the other side, because they were making unallocated cuts in 2017. It was not done by the it was very specific in 2015 that Governor Parnell did that one, and 2016 was very accurately reflected that Governor Walker did that. And if you want to lay on that we don't touch his budget and he doesn't touch our budget, that is wrong, in my opinion, because really I have no problem to have a contingency fund, which this is, when an emergency comes up. But since 2010, any of these, plus the three that we heard that I don't know where they were paid out of, none of those were emergencies. And so it's back to, which I appreciate our co-chair of the whole transparency that we've been doing the last 2 years, going through the process and having all these amendments, although it takes a lot longer. It helps everyone be able to participate in any way. This is a fund that, if it's supposed to be, and Mr. Teal is more than welcome to come up, that is supposed to be there for emergencies. At this point, nothing that I have been able to find since 2010 to today that was used for emergencies. So really, I guess the only thing you can go on by rejecting this amendment is to say that you just don't want to touch his budget so that he doesn't touch our budget. And I'll tell you again, if we have spending in it, and I'm pretty sure all of it's pretty justified because I know the chair of the legislature goes through it very piece by piece, he should take it out if we are not spending money in the way that we should or the way it's been allocated. And this is a contingency fund that is doesn't look like it's being used for any kind of emergencies. And he has over, let me see, I brought the sheet for you because I thought you might want to know, Mr. Ortiz, Representative Ortiz, but in the amounts that we even found that he did, the things that he was taking out was legal and judiciary services, $36,600, telecommunications, $5,300, advertising and promos, $21,400, equipment and machinery for $3,300, IT telecommunications for $1,700, and communication sales, IA services, $400. And that was what was happened with 2015. Again, we know that he can move money from all sorts of areas. Money's not being utilized for what I think it's here. I still left the majority of it in there in case an emergency happens to come up that he cannot cover.
Further discussion. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak against the amendment. Nothing in the amendment would prevent anything that had happened that Representative Wilson listed, right? We're all under the limit of $400,000. In early January, if we had a different kind of an earthquake, we had a slip, if we had a subduction, all of our coastline along southern Alaska from the chain to southeast would have potentially been have devastating impact. And $500,000 in emergency response in a situation like that would disappear immediately. We need, in a state like this, which is sits on the ring of fire, the ability to respond really fast. And if you think we're going to call an emergency session when the Anchorage Airport has been destroyed, where are we going to go? How are we going to get together? This is a reasonable amount of money. All of the things that have been talked about are under the cap that you're doing. I want to make sure that if this governor or the next governor, and I would defend it for the past and the future, has the ability to respond to natural disaster. And the money rolls over, it doesn't get used, keeps going. This is an important fund. Emergency management in the immediate nature of having to respond, we don't want a second delay. We don't want him to turn to somebody and say, do I have the money? We want him to act. And that's really my concern in what this fund is about. You know, Fairbanks has had disasters. That's what I think about. Southeast, South Central, that earthquake, volcanoes, the list goes on. 1989, the Exxon Valdez on the rocks. We've had them. It's not new to us. We're not strangers to it. It's simply a contingency fund that he can act on. All the things that you listed were under the cap. They could still happen. That's my concern. Thank you.
Yeah, and Representative Thompson, before I go to you, I just want to draw people's attention to the fact that this is a contingency fund. It isn't just an emergency fund. We have the chief executive of the state of Alaska, and this is a contingency fund which can be tapped for many different purposes, and some of those purposes have been talked about by Representative Wilson. And so we have the chief executive of the state. Anyway, I just wanted to clarify that we may decide on certain uses, but that's not what it's labeled as. It's there as a contingency fund for the unexpected. It doesn't have to be an emergency. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. As far as being an emergency fund, another $150,000 isn't going to mean squat if we have an earthquake that half of the western Alaska sinks into the ocean. You know, we've got emergency funds. We've got the National Guard. And if it was an emergency of that magnitude, the federal government would be right here, Johnny on the spot, quicker than we can react. And this is like $150,000 in a contingency fund to be used for other things. Isn't going to make that much difference. $400,000 is more than what's been spent in the last 8 years, and so I don't understand why we're going to argue about $150,000. This is just saying we're being responsible, not throwing that much more into the budget. And I think it's irresponsible if we don't try to bring this down to $400,000. Why would we want to just add more money to the budget when it's not necessary?
Representative Guerra.
Thanks, Chair. I don't like the message this sends, Mr. Chair. Governor Parnell always had at least $600,000. Nobody tried to cut it back then. Nobody made any noise about it back then. Nobody thought Governor Parnell abused the money back then in either party. Now this is going to be reduced by 50% below what Governor Parnell was allowed. This is not an emergency fund. As the chair said, it's a contingency fund for high priority issues. Look, we could spend all day talking about what those could be. OMB, my understanding, was supposed to be doing work on health care cost containment last year, and they got wrapped up into a number of other things. If they decide they're going to do real work on health care cost containment and they need consultants, I'm actually okay with that, because we should all be doing that. But I don't like the message it sends. I don't want this governor treated much differently than prior governors. Mr. Chair, as a Democrat, I never tried to do that to Republican governors. The legislature was a Republican majority back then. They didn't try and do it to Governor Parnell. I thought it was all appropriate back then. I haven't seen waste, and Mr. Chair, I'm fine with it.
I think we're getting off on intents of people and needs, and I don't think that we want to do that. I want to talk just about the budget itself and its implications, not what people's intents might be. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Mr. Chair. So the concern that I have is the representative from North Pole has indicated that this fund really hasn't been used, and so if there's something that the administration is planning on using it for that they really need it for, I think that's part of the reason this has come up again. Maybe it might be good to kind of hear. And I really didn't hear anything when we talked yesterday with the people from the administration, the admin services director for the executive office. They didn't say that there really was anything that was important. I mean, if there's something that we need to be aware of that's that important that they feel they need this $150,000, it might be good to know. I mean, it might be good for us to understand. But right now, for a fund that hasn't been used, I haven't heard a good enough argument for why, or a strong enough argument for why we should keep money in a fund that hasn't been used. Why we should appropriate money when we don't know what it potentially could be used for. And I think that's part of where some of the conversation from the representative from North Pole has come is if they haven't used this for the most part, then why should this remain in there? And so I would ask that you again support this amendment, because I think it's good. Or let's have the administration come up and really tell us why they feel that this shouldn't be cut, what they expect to spend it on, or why they really feel that this $150,000 is really going to put them in a difficult place. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And further comments? Again, a contingency fund is for unexpected things. They're not. If they're known, it wouldn't be a contingency. It would be a budgeted item that would be specific to what you're asking for. So Representative Wilson and then Ortiz and then hopefully we can. Representative Wilson.
So I find it fascinating. Again, Representative Guerra, this is not against Governor Walker. This is about the numbers. I don't care who the governor is. Their money's not being spent. They don't even know what they spent the money on. When I asked yesterday, what has the money been spent on, we were given three specific items, none of which were in the budget. None of those three. I dug around, tried to figure out where the transition money was, where the redistricting money came from, or where some gas line money came from. It did not come from this fund. And contingency mostly is an emergency type fund. They don't necessarily have to use it for that, but we gave the money with no restrictions on it. And as you found in the components, I can't hardly believe there was an advertising and promo that just had to be spent out of this fund. I appreciate Representative Guttenberg, and on emergencies, absolutely. If an earthquake happened, if any type of emergency happened, that's why we're going to have, and I'm not going to discuss it because it would be wrong, SAP 25 coming up, which talks about putting over $6 million in our emergency response, because that's who goes out there and makes sure that we take care of our people when something happens. I can't find any other fund like this anywhere where there is no parameters. We just argued over $20 million in which we have to have a report given to us on how it's going to be spent. And most of it so that we wouldn't have to have a supplemental. Nobody came to my office, Mr. Chairman, to tell me why this money needed to be there. I know they went to other people's offices, but I just want to let you know no one came to me and said, we really need this money for these purposes. And I hope if they came to your office, they did give that explanation. You are absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. If this money isn't spent, it goes back to the general fund. Except here. This does not go back to the general fund if it's not expended. It goes into the capital fund. I don't know why, but it does. Just want to make that sure that's clear. But the bigger picture is, as we get done with a budget here, we're going to have a gap in that budget. And we're going to charge our people for this $150,000 for this next year because it's going to be in the budget. And they don't know whether it's going to be spent or not spent. And I could have taken all of it, and that's what I would have preferred to do, but at least at that point I knew that they had utilized some of it, just didn't know what the purposes were. So, you know, I'm not cutting into anything that's been being utilized. I'm sorry I didn't find it during other governors' reigns on that, because if I found the same thing, I would have done the same thing as they proposed, you know, right here. I'm just not willing to go back and tell my people that we're looking at taxes so that we could put money that we don't know whether it will be spent or what it will be spent on. And at this point, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to leave this money in there. Thank you.
Thank you. And the objections maintained. Representative Ortiz, did you? Secretary, would you call the roll?
Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Guerra?
No.
Representative Grimm?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Five yay, six nay. Oh, I'm six.
No, he walked.
So with a vote of five in favor and five opposed, HGOV2 fails to be adopted. Now we are on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We take a break.
We'll take a short break. Back on record, and we're going to have our next meeting. We are canceling the 8 a.m. meeting tomorrow. We will meet from 1 to 3:30 tomorrow. That's Thursday. March 8th, and at that we will be adjourned today.